And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Move the Six, presented by AARP. Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks here with you. And Buck, well, hope everybody had a wonderful Christmas. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm great, man. I am great. DJ, it's that time of year. It's that time for us to begin to really start paying attention to college football. We kind of look at it in the periphery. We kind of look at it from afar. But now, when we get to bowl season, now it's really on. Now, you got to kind of start digging into the top fives and the big boards and all that other stuff, because when the calendar year flips, you know it's on.
Oh, it is on. And we're going to have some fun talking about these playoff bowl games that are coming up this weekend. Also, though, we talk about, you know, it's time to flip the calendar. I know we're a little bit away from baseball season, Buck, but we are going to have some fun today, because I'm going to roll an interview I did with Chris Rose, our buddy Chris Rose, who works with us at NFL Network, also at MLB Network. We ran into each other down at the winter meetings for baseball and had a chance to catch up with him. And Roser, as we know, is a huge Cleveland Browns fan, so we like to catch up with him at least once a year and find out what he thinks of his Browns and what's going on there, and have some fun talking a little bit of baseball as well as some NFL football. So we'll roll that interview a little bit later on. I'll touch on a couple of these NFL games we're keeping an eye on this weekend as well that have playoff implications, but I do want to really hone in and talk about these college football playoff games. Oklahoma, LSU in the Peach Bowl, Clemson and Ohio State, they square off in the Fiesta Bowl. Why don't we start there, Buck? Let's start Oklahoma, LSU. What you're looking forward to watching in that game?
Well, obviously your eyes want to cast You want to cast your eyes right to the quarterbacks. And so Jalen Hurts, who will be playing his – look, I mean, this is his fifth start in the college football playoff. I think that's more than anybody we've seen. And that experience from Alabama and then going to Oklahoma, this should enable him to be ready for the big stage. And I think for Jalen, look, he started out hot, white hot for the Sooners, kind of came back to earth a little bit near the end of the season. And so for evaluated, you're trying to figure out what strides has he made as a passer. We know he can run the ball. We know he can make some things happen with his legs. But this is when he will be tested to really have to make things happen as a passer. And how can he attack this LSU defense? Because if I'm an evaluator, and as an evaluator, I kind of liken him a little bit to Dak Prescott. He reminds me of what Dak was at Mississippi State, kind of a physical, rugged presence at the quarterback position. I believe Dak was a better passer at Mississippi State than Jalen Hurts has been. But I think if he is going to change the narrative around his game, there's no better place to start than having a monster game against LSU. Because if he can throw the ball efficiently and effectively versus this LSU defense, I think with the creativity and the imagination that scouts are going to enter this offseason, I think you will see people squint and say, well, maybe, just maybe, there's a way for him to make his way into the league, and maybe he can grow into being a starting quarterback.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch him throw the ball around, and watching him throw the ball around to CeeDee Lamb is going to be interesting to see how they try and take him away. LSU has outstanding secondary. You look at Fulton. He's going to be at the Senior Bowl. He's one of the top players at his position in this upcoming draft. They've got Stingley, whatever the young kid.
Derek Stingley.
Stingley, am I saying that?
Yeah,
right?
Derek Stingley. Freshman All-American.
24. He's a really good player.
Man,
really good player. So, but the interesting thing is when you talk to people around the league, Buck, I don't know if you get the same thing I do. This is a great receiver group. And I can tell you, I've talked to a bunch of people. You know, we're still trying to sort them out, trying to figure out. But of everybody I've talked to that's told me emphatically who they believe is a top receiver, CeeDee Lamb has been the guy every single time. As much as we talk about Jerry Jeudy, the teams around the league like CeeDee Lamb better than Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like about CeeDee Lamb and his game. And when I look at his game, it's funny, man. He kind of reminds me in a way of a more physical version of DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins is a guy who he wins with his ability to kind of take the ball off the backboard, meaning he wins the 50-50 balls. He doesn't have great separation in terms of his speed, but his physicality, his toughness, and just his knack for winning contested balls makes him a dangerous threat. And he also has that quote-unquote dog in him, that competitive spirit that you love to see. In CeeDee Lamb, I see similar things. I don't believe he's going to blitz to 40. I think he's going to be probably like a mid-4.5 to low 4.5 guy. But his physicality and toughness, his catch radius, his ability to go and kind of wrestle the ball from defensive backs makes him a welcome target as a number one. And I just believe that as more people look at the success that Mike Thomas has had, that DeAndre Hopkins continues to have, I think you're going to see the scales kind of tip to the big physical wide receiver that can win to create separation with the ball in the air as opposed to the beep, beep, road runner type.
Yeah. And he's great after the catch, man. He is so physical and tough after the catch. So that, to me, I had the same comp. I saw a little bit of Hopkins there, but I think after the catch, he's even better with what he does in that area of his game. A couple more Oklahoma guys before we flip over to LSU. I got a chance this last week to watch Neville Gallimore and Kenneth Murray. Neville Gallimore, the defensive tackle, has got some violent hands, Buck,
yes,
and he plays hard. Everybody tells us he's going to test like crazy, so he's going to post incredible numbers there at the combine. But they play him over the center. They play him on the edge of the guard. They'll play him outside, move him all over the place. Just a real violent club swim move. You see him just chuck guards on the ground. He's got knockback. He's not the most polished guy, but, man, he's got just a lot of power and explosiveness in his hands. So he's a very good football player.
Really good football player. I had a chance to watch him a week ago, right before we did the Senior Bowl recap show. And the thing that I liked about him is I liked the way that he played with his hands. I liked the way he played on the other side of the line of scrimmage. I felt like his short area quickness was good. And I felt like he was a run stuffer plus, meaning he's going to make his hay stopping the run. But I do believe he gives you just a little bit more than your traditional inside defensive tackle that is the run stopper. I think he has enough ability to push the pocket and maybe be a 5 to 6 sack a season guy. There is some intrigue to him and what he brings to the table. And then when you talk to your scouting buddies, they all talk about, hey, man, he's going to test out the gym. He's a little different. He's a little different than his body type would suggest.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go. And Kenneth Murray, the linebacker, man, I just love the fact that this dude can fly. And they play him, they move him around a little bit. I like him more kind of detached from the box to me, where he can just kind of see, run, and hit. That's what he does best. Chase plays from the backside. You can blitz him. He's listed at 6'2", 234 pounds. So I'm anxious to see what he looks like. I've heard he's an impressive-looking guy on the hoof. So very, very athletic. I think he can run and cover. He just is a little bit slow to kind of see and sort inside. He's not going to bang off blocks. That's not really the way that he plays. He's more of a lateral guy, run and chase, make plays that way. But to me, he's behind from Clemson, the kid from Clemson.
Isaiah Simmons.
I have Simmons over him. But the similar in that you just talk about guys that can really, really run. And we talk about it all the time, man. If you have a bad defense, you more than likely have a slow defense. This dude adds a lot of juice to your group.
Yeah, you got to be fast. And I think that's the bigger thing. And even though I believe the league is about to come back full circle where you do begin to look for linebackers that can stack and shed and kind of take on blocks, ideally you're trying to stack an 11-man squad on defense that can run and run things down from sideline to sideline. He fits the bill, being able to run and chase, the burst, the blitzing. You have to have multiple tools in your bag to be able to kind of be a high-end player. He certainly has that.
And no doubt. When we flip it over, Buck, and look at LSU, what are you looking forward to in this one?
Look, man, it has to be Joe Burrow. He is the most improved college prospect that I've ever seen over a one-year span. From junior year to senior year, I've never seen someone improve as much as he had. I think if you look at the numbers, it kind of bears fruit. His completion percentage jumped by 20%. His touchdowns jumped by 300%. He is more decisive and accurate in the pocket. He has pocket awareness that is rare for a young quarterback. And he has some athleticism that enables you to do some of the zone read stuff and all that. I won't throw the label on him sneaky athletic, but this is a really good athlete. This is a guy that was an all-state basketball player, Mr. Ohio. He has a lot of things. And I think the best trait that he has and the thing that will kind of lead scouts to fall in love with is competitive spirit. We talk about it, not over my dead body attitude. I think that comes out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited to see him play against an Oklahoma defense that, look, it hasn't been a great defense in the Big 12, but they're challenging because there's some NFL athletes. He's done it all year against the SEC, but now the stage is bigger. All eyes are on him. How does he handle the pressure that comes along with being the Heisman Trophy winner? How does he handle the pressure with being the likely number one overall pick? How does he handle a, now we're in the playoffs, I have an opportunity to lead my team to a national title? I just kind of want to see how he handles everything that comes with being on the biggest stage.
The way I would describe Joe Burrow, and this will tease our conversation with Chris Rose a little bit later on, use a baseball analogy. I'm not paying to watch Joe Burrow take batting practice because it will not be impressive. He's not going to hit tape measure home runs. But I will put him at third in the lineup, and I'll sleep good at night because I know exactly what I'm going to get from him. He's just been, you know, this year, Buck, in what I've seen, five, six games. I haven't seen a bad game. Like, you just haven't seen it. He's just been so consistent. And then you add up, you know, acceptable levels in every area in terms of the physical stuff. I use the word acceptable, not exceptional. But he has exceptional intangibles. So I've got an acceptable athlete with acceptable arm strength, and I've got exceptional intangibles. You can win a lot of football games in the NFL with that combination.
You know, it's funny, right? So if we're doing this, like, coming off the heels of, like, dealing with my son getting ready for college. So let's just say you talked about acceptable. So let's say he has B-plus marks in all of the physical traits and tools, but A-plus intangibles. What does a grade point average net out to? Mm-hmm. It probably nets out to maybe like an A-minus prospect. And I think the thing that you want to see is you just want to see him continue to do it. There are going to be questions in the offseason as we do the run-up to the draft. What is the reasons behind the dramatic jump, the one-year surge in production? Is it Joe Brady? Is it him? Could he transcend the scheme that he's currently in? But based on how he's performed, look, man, it's hard to find a lot that you don't like about his game based on the tape in 2019.
No doubt. A couple other players to keep an eye on there. Grant Delpit is going to be a fascinating one because I thought he played a little bit better last year than he has this year. Really ultra-athletic safety. I think he can cover some in the slot if you want him to do that. The big knock on him has been missed tackles. I think he's got 15 or 16 missed tackles this year, and that to me is something I've really tried to focus on at the safety position, kind of going back through guys I've got right, guys I've got wrong. That is a legitimate concern there. So that's kind of my thoughts on him, Buck. I feel like people have talked about him as a top 10 guy. To me, I feel more like kind of a bottom of one player, a really good football player, but that the tackling thing does bother me a little bit.
Yeah, I think the tackling thing will bother, but you know, as scouts, we always learn from our previous mistakes, right? And I remember the conversation. Yeah. He's not this player. So I'm going to say Derwin James' name, but he's not Derwin James. But I do remember we were like, the scouting community, not you and I. Oh, well, you know, we don't know. Production wasn't this, it wasn't that. But a year before, we had seen him be a really good player. I think it's really important with these guys who may drop off their final season when they come out to go back and look at what he looked like in 2018 and try to take both things in consideration when giving him a grade because he's a talented athlete. He has been a really good player. And depending on the way the tackles look, some of those things are fixable. If it's not a desire thing, if it's a technique thing, it's, A, let's come to balance when we strike. Let's understand how to make tackles when a guy is on the move on the sideline versus, A, I got to make a profile tackle. He's square up and I hit him. And so as we continue to dig into that, we'll see. But in these games, this game right now where the speed is going to be as fast as you'll face in college, the intensity, I need to see him stick his nose in there and make some tackles because, look, he's not Greedy Williams in terms of tackling. I just want to see him make some solid tackles on the edge because we've seen in the pros, people isolate, they get your guys in space, and one missed tackle is the difference between a 5-yard gain and a 20-plus yard big play. And so he has to be able to make solid, secure tacklers. I don't need him to be a trained killer, but I do need him to be a sure tackler.
No doubt. That'll be – look, he can – one of the things, too, I'd heard is that he was not healthy. I'm going back through and looking at my notes here. A lot of low missed tackles, Buck. Just kind of diving low missed tackles.
Yeah, and see that that thing, like the
angles,
thing about
– angles are good.
Yeah. The cut, quote-unquote cut tackling.
Leaves his feet. They're all leave your feet, low missed tackles. I got a boatload of them.
Yeah, and like the cut tackling thing is – it's something that has to be practiced. And If you're not practicing, you're not going to be a good cut tackler. Ideally, you want to see guys wrap up. Like, you got to corral them and lasso them like you're a cowboy and get them down to the ground. And that's one of the things that he will have to address. And as you know it, we've sat in those meetings. DJ, they're going to have a reel of his missed tackles, and they're going to have him explain them. And they're going to have him understand, like, look, you have to be a better tackler to be a high-end pick. And can we get that part out of you? But, yeah, it's an issue because – in the back end, your safeties and corners now, they have to be tackled. You can't hide anybody. And so you just can't be a ball hawk only. You have to be able to be a factor in the run game. And so, yeah, this game he has to show up. And then the corner, Christian Fulton, I want to see what he looks like on the edge, because he's been a guy who has tremendous tools, very gifted. He's the next great LSU corner. Well, let's see how he plays in another big game. How does he perform? How does he stack up? Does he have an opportunity to play against CeeDee Lamb? What does he look like in those matchups? Down at LSU, they talk about iron sharpen iron. He goes against top receivers every day. Well, let's see what it looks like now when we're seeing Lincoln Riley try and isolate and put you in the blender. Let's see if he holds up and if he can hold his own against CeeDee Lamb.
Man, no doubt. And two other players here real quick. Chaisson, edge rusher for LSU, is – man, he is long and explosive and athletic. He's not a pure rusher. He's more of an athlete than a rusher right now. But, man, there's a lot to work with him. Just as an athlete, he's going to be a first-round pick just because of the tools you have there to work with. He's somebody I could see, Buck, with a nice two-game stretch here to close out the season. He could really help himself because everybody loves the athlete. They just want to see a little bit more from the player, and this will be a good stage for him to potentially get that done. One more real quick, and I'll get your thoughts on these two guys. Justin Jefferson is one of my favorite receivers in this draft. I think I'm higher on him than the majority of the scouting community. This dude, because he fits the profile, what we've been talking about, he doesn't necessarily have to run, you know, 4.35. He's a really good player. He's got excellent, excellent shake at the top of his route. He's loose. He's got some short area burst. Just tons of separation. He's not fast, but he's got a second gear when the ball goes up in the air. He'll break tackles after the catch. He can play inside. He can play outside. I think he's a darn good football player.
Man, they have two really good football players at wide receiver. Jamar Chase, sophomore, Wanda Biletnikoff. He's a terrific player. Justin Jefferson. And they would tell you that Jamar Chase learns from Justin Jefferson, watches him in practice, steals some of his moves, some of the releases that you see those guys do versus press coverage. It's because they're looking at each other in one-on-one. And we have talked about it, and we've kind of come around to – hey, I may not want the fastest wide receiver. I want the craftsman. I want the skill guy that has the refined technical game, the guy that is a great route runner who shows excellent balance and body control, getting in and out of routes. I want the guy that can win the 50-50 balls and has enough strength and power to break arm tackles on the perimeter. I want that guy more than just the vertical playmaking threat. There's a role certainly for the vertical playmaking threat, but depending on what we're looking for, a guy that is the lead option in the passing game, I'm looking for that. Justin Jefferson strikes me as a guy who has some of that potential. And then I just want to just kind of catch a glimpse of Jamar Chase because, look, I can't get him this year, but I do want to see what I could get down the line. And, DJ, we've talked about these wide receivers. I told some buddies, like, man, there's so many wide receivers in this draft class that if I'm sitting in the first round, I'm keeping my hands in my pocket. I am saving my chips. I'm trying to acquire more second and third round picks because I'll take two in the second and third round as opposed to spending big on one in the first round, because I do believe there are a lot of guys that are really close. And, man, every day on Path to the Draft, when we do our cluster buster, we could just sit in the wide receiver room because there's many guys that are going to be touching when it comes to their names and the cards that – it's going to be tough to decide to determine who deserves to be stacked where based upon what kind of offense you run.
Yeah, there's going to be different flavors, that's for sure. Plenty of talent at the wide receiver position. All right, let's get to this other game here. Mm-hmm. Clemson, Ohio State. Clemson, Buck, Isaiah Simmons, we've talked about him a little bit, can play anywhere on the defense. Look, he's going to be a top 15 pick. I don't think we're speaking out of school on that one. You've got T. Higgins, the wide receiver. You've got Etienne. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence is down the way because we've got to wait another year for him. But Travis Etienne's an interesting one because, man, Dabo Swinney was hot that he did not get up for any of the awards there at the end of the season because when you look at his yards per carry, I think he led the country, is off the charts what he was able to do there. I think it's a little bit of an indictment on just – Clemson not playing interesting games, so not as many people paid attention to him. But very explosive, very good in the pass game as well.
Yeah, very explosive, a little more of a straight line player. But look, he has the juice that you look for at the position. I know Dabo was really upset about Travis not getting the looks, but I think it's hard because the ACC was down and they didn't have any marquee games that you had to tune in. Florida State normally is a marquee game. Florida State is down. The only game that was really close was the North Carolina game, and those guys played well. I think with Etienne, and look, the thing will be when we are able to put him and DeAndre Swift and Keyshawn Vaughn and some of these other guys in the same room on the carpet at the same time and really see what each of them bring in the passing game. You've talked about his ability to catch swings and screens. He's a problem. That speed in the open field is something that defensive coordinators will cringe trying to think about how are we going to slow this guy down. His ability to run inside, run between the tackles. I want to see how he handles Ohio State's physicality and toughness. Is he a guy that can be the steady Eddie, the workhorse, the guy that we can depend on to carry it maybe 18 to 22 times and get us 100 yards and kind of get stronger as the game goes on? I want to see if he wears down a little bit. But look, he's a really good player. He has the ability to pop anytime to take it the distance. And so there are a lot of eyes on him. And look, you mentioned Isaiah Simmons, so I want to talk about this. Isaiah Simmons is a fantastic athlete. He's a former high school track star, like a legitimate track athlete at the second level. Bounced around because it took a while for people to determine what position he plays. So at linebacker, I want to see, because Ohio State, despite them being a spread team, they kind of run it at you. I want to see Isaiah Simmons hold up against the run game. I want to see how he handles that, what he does in that aspect of the game.
I have not had a chance yet to watch T. Higgins. I feel like I've already done a zillion receivers, but I haven't got to T. Higgins yet. Your take on him, Buck, what you know about
man,
him?
Man, like he's another one of those big, fast, physical guys. Like in the luxury that I have, a lot of these guys have come through the opening circuit, so I've had a chance to watch him, work with them, kind of see him as high school athletes and watch them mature. And T. Higgins is potentially a dominant player. And I believe he's kind of underrated on the major scale just because, look, there's so many wide receivers that are flashy that kind of catch our eye, but this is a height, weight, speed specimen. He is the classic number one receiver in terms of long, rangy, big catch radius, can take it off the rim. Similar but still different than Mike Williams. Mike Williams was more of a bully on the outside. I don't see T. Higgins in that vein, but I see him win a lot of contested balls on the outside, the back shoulder phase. He can do all that stuff. Really good player. I don't know if he was as dominant as Mike Williams was in this offense, but we're talking about a top 10 player in Mike Williams.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm looking forward to seeing him in this contest. And as we flip it over to the other side here, Buck, going to be going against Ohio State. T. Higgins going to get a look at, in my opinion, the best corner in the country in Jeff Okuda, who can play in your face press coverage. He's still, when he plays off, he's loose, he's fluid, he can really close. I'm a big Jeff Okuda fan. To me, I think he's the best cover man I've seen in this draft class.
Look, man, we can talk about these two teams rivaling for the moniker of DBU. We've seen so many DBs come from both of these schools. Mm-hmm. When I think about Ohio State and the DBs that have come out of there, man, I think it's safe to say, like, look, I like Marshawn Lattimore. I wasn't as high as, like, some of the Crowders. I think Jeff Okuda may be the most complete of all of those that have come out in recent years in terms of his ability to not only play press but to play off, to come up and tackle, and to do all those things. I think he checks off all the boxes at the cornerback position. He is exactly what you look for as a classic shutdown corner. I think he has the right mentality and everything. So, look, this is going to be a fascinating matchup. I want to see him take on T. Higgins, and I just can't wait to see how it plays out. But you're talking about a guy who is, in my estimation, a top five talent at the position, a guy who really checks off a lot of boxes.
And you look at two other corners in this game too. Sean Wade, you look at Arnett, both those guys are top two-round players. Wade is a really, really smooth, athletic nickel. Mm-hmm. Arnett's physical, a little bit tight, but a real good football player. So a great secondary there for Ohio State. And then, look, we've got the two headliners, the two guys that went to the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Justin Fields, like much like Trevor Lawrence, will have to wait a year. We will not have to wait a year for Chase Young.
No, not at all. Chase Young, like this is funny, man, because in looking at this, I was with the Carolina Panthers right after they drafted Julius Peppers second overall. And when I look at Chase Young and I think back to the impact that Julius Peppers had, I can see Chase Young being that kind of impact player. Dominant off the edge, a guy that is easy to envision having 13, 14 sacks a year. First step quickness combined with length, combined with great technical skills and hands and the violence. He gets it done consistently off the edge. And so this is a big stage game. This will be the first time that people will tune in. But, I mean, you talk about a guy who, in my estimation, is the best prospect in this draft class if he elects to come out. I want to see him shine on the biggest stage. And I think the playoff games, for me as an evaluator, I kind of give them – credit and a half. These games matter more because I believe these games are more like NFL
weight.
Football
yep.
games. They have a little added weight. And I know that we're not supposed to dock people down, but I can't help but think, like, look, this game is a little more. It adds a little more to your total score. So if I see Chase Young or any of these guys that we mentioned dominate in these games, I give them a little more credit because with everything that is on the line, if you can raise your game in this kind of environment, speaks volumes about your competitiveness and your talent.
And to me, it's interesting when you look at, the Washington Redskins job, potentially, that a lot of people said, that's not a very attractive job if you talked about it a month ago. Now, all of a sudden, you look at the way Dwayne Haskins is mm-hmm. playing a little bit better. Obviously, college yep. teammates there with Chase Young. And you look at having the number two pick and a chance to get Chase Young. Man, that's you got a pretty nice building blocks there on each side of the ball going forward. And Chase Young, to me, this is just you used the phrase the cherry on top a little bit ago. Mm. Buck, this is the cherry on top of his career with these two games potentially.
Yeah, because I don't know if everyone has paid attention to, and everyone and it's easy to kind of fall in love with the quarterbacks or whatever. But everyone to a man, if you ask on the road, they talk about Chase Young being a dominant player, the best player in the draft, and that combination. I've heard someone say, like, hey, the Julius Peppers, Von Miller thing in terms of guys leaping off the ball, defensive players that could have that kind of impact. Chase Young can have a major impact. And I'll say this because everyone likes comparisons. I think the difference between a Chase Young and a Myles Garrett, Chase Young, to me, was a better football player at this stage than Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett was a remarkable athlete and flashed, and you could say, like, hey, it's going to put it together. Chase Young is a refined football player with the athleticism and the other stuff. So if they were in the same draft class, I would rank Chase Young over Myles Garrett. And so I just wanted people to understand, like, that's how Chase Young is viewed in the scouting community. He is viewed as a special, special player, and this would be a great stage for him to show off his talents.
Gosh, this feels good to talk about the draft, doesn't it, Buck?
Yeah. Hey, look, we shouldn't go because, look, there's another running back, J.K. Dobbins, in this game. And J.K. Dobbins,
oh yeah, there you go,
is a pro. Like that's the only thing. Like at the bottom of my report, I was like, pro, because pro running backs are supposed to be able to run it and catch it. They're supposed to finish, handle heavy workloads, be able to be the workhorse when you need it. The last four games of the year, we saw J.K. Dobbins kind of take his game up a notch. This is a guy that is kind of underrated a little bit, in my estimation, on the national scene. This could be his coming out party for the football world to recognize him as like a top, top player.
I have the same grade on him as I have on Swift. So he, to me, is in the mix to be the best running back in this draft class. That's the type of love I have for him. He's a football player, man. He's built for it. He is built for it. The way he runs through contact, he finishes every run. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Now, he's not as loose and elusive as Zeke. To me, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. But I do love the fact that just the contact power that he possesses, that's when you watch him, it's doing NFL games every week, Buck, and studying this as we do, this is what plays, you know, this is what plays at the next
a
level.
A pro, man. He is a pro. When I look at him in a weird way, DJ, like it's crazy because look, this guy was drafted later, but he's played exceptional level. A little Kareem Hunt ish in my mind in terms of like
that's a good
how call. he plays like kind of physical, kind of you talked about it like, and I think the way that you said, man, built for it. He is built for it. And I think you could use similar things last year when you talked about Josh Jacobs. Like, yeah, I don't know all about all the stats, but when I look at him, he's built to play the game. And I think J.K. Dobbins is built like that.
No doubt. All right, Buck, one NFL game that's the big game of the week before we get to our conversation or my chat with Chris Rose. Niners-Seahawks, it's really the game that matters this weekend. I know it's on the road. I know that's a tough place to play. I know it's a divisional opponent. I know the Seahawks already beat the 49ers. I just can't see the 49ers losing this football game, Buck.
I mean, right now I would have to say, like, on paper, in reality, they're the better team with what they have available. That front line is dominant. When you match up their defensive front line versus the Seahawks offensive line, you wonder how Seattle's going to be able to block them. Then you go without any of the running backs, how they're going to be able to stave off the pass rush from Russell Wilson when they can't establish the run. And I know Marshawn Lynch is coming back, but I don't know what kind of impact he'll have. To me, this is a game where we can recognize the Niners as the best team in the NFC if they can pull this off. And I know the Saints are playing better, but, man, when I look at the Niners, there's something different about them. I feel like they are a team that has a chameleon-type style where it doesn't matter who they play, how they play. They can blend it. If you want to get rough and rugged, they can do that. The only question mark that I have is defensively, they have been struggling the last couple of weeks. A lot of points. A lot of guys crossing the goal line on this team. And I don't know if they've caught up to Robert Saleh's scheme, but the defense has to play better if they're going to be heavyweight contenders. But this is one that I think the Niners should take care of business on the road.
Quick question for you, Buck. Who's the best offensive player on the San Francisco 49ers?
George Kittle.
Catches the football for him. Who didn't play in the first meeting between these two teams?
Yeah, George Kittle didn't play in that game. And you look, it was a difference maker.
That is now, a big difference.
It's a big, but it's not even the passing game. When you look at the Niners' stats with George Kittle on the field in the run game, for a team that likes to run on the edges and they like to run off tackle and on the perimeter, his ability to win and seal the edges is advantageous for the Niners. George Kittle playing could be the difference in this. I'm going with the Niners in this. I think the Niners have it. And man, if the Niners get the number one seed, man, just fast forward it, man. A Niners Saints championship game. Whew. Sign me up for that one.
That'd be fun. And maybe a rematch, a little dual rematch of Niners Ravens. Not only a rematch from earlier this year, but a rematch from the Super Bowl a few years back. So, yeah, just to see what happens there. Niners and Seahawks, absolutely the biggest game on the NFL slate. All right, Buck. I teased it a little bit earlier. Had a chance to catch up with our good buddy Chris Rose at the baseball winter meetings, and thought you guys would enjoy this conversation with our good buddy Roser. Here you go.
How are we doing here? The Browns, we'll get there, but how are you doing?
These are my worlds colliding right here. Like, this is it. I've got my football buddy here right in the middle of my baseball world at the winter meetings. So
You should see me downstairs. Because people, it's so great. It's like they see me, they kind of know who I am.
Yeah, but you're out of place. It's out of context.
It's like watching somebody trying to solve a crossword puzzle right in front of your eyes, and it is awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, but here's the thing. I don't know if I've told you this before, but baseball in September. Now, everybody that plays baseball is a huge NFL fan.
Yeah.
And they all have these fantasy teams, right? Like, they have all the drafts in late August or what have you. They all get dressed up in their jerseys and the team, you know, and they kill each other for the picks. And there's certain guys who think they actually could be NFL GMs and all that sort of stuff. Go watch a Sunday for just a second in the baseball world when they pan the dugout. Nobody is there because they're all checking how their fantasy teams or whatever else they may be doing in the football world. They all run to the clubhouse to go see what's going on.
Yeah.
So they just, I mean, they all love it. So for you to be walking around, they're so like, fun. There he is. Combine.
It's like, I know him. I don't know the name, but he looks familiar. Right. Can't put a finger on it. Get to the Browns, Rose. What are we thinking here?
It's been really disappointing on so many levels. Not because I thought that they were going to necessarily get to the Super Bowl or, heck, even win the division. I mean, I told you at the beginning of the year that I felt like that division was really strong between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And then when Big Ben got hurt, I thought maybe they were going to be cast by the wayside. But Tomlin's done a great job. But with the Browns, the disappointing thing is that their offense has taken such a huge step back, such a huge step back. And the thing that made them so much fun over the last seven games of 2018 was, for the first time in decades, Cleveland's offense seemed to have like a rhythm to it. There was a fluidity. We felt like we had the quarterback for the first time since Bernie Kosar was a competent quarterback. I mean, that's no joke.
Yeah.
Like
that goes a long way back.
It goes a long way back. And, that has, it's just been like grinding gears watching them play on offense. You know, they've played behind the sticks so much. It's not
a lot of penalties,
sticks,
yeah.
But behind the sticks, right? The defense has not played well. I thought that there were times where the defense would have to win them games, and they haven't. I mean,
but your secondary finally gets healthy. Miles Garrett's gone for the
year. Right. That was, I mean, I was shocked. I was like, I cannot believe.
Were
what
you
I
watching
just,
that game live? When
of course
when
I was. Yeah. I mean, I watch every. You know me. I watch every game live.
I want to get inside your living room or wherever you were watching.
It was.
Game
well, like, I was watching. Like, it was interesting. So I was watching it with my wife and our youngest son. Mm-hmm. And my oldest son is a freshman in college, and he calls me the minute it happened because he was watching with all his buddies. He goes to school in Ohio. He was like, "Dad, what? Like, what happened?"
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't explain it.
Yeah,
I have no idea. And it's just, it's continued with this pattern of non-discipline on so many levels, including the coaching, the players, and there's just been a real lack of accountability. And I think that, unfortunately, like for the first time, we felt like we were pointed in the right direction with the right personnel guy in charge. We didn't know about the coach, but we felt like we had the quarterback and the talent to compete. And now I think everybody's got to take a big step back and feel like what pieces are the right ones and which ones do we have to move on from?
Maturity and poise were kind of the two words that I came back to. If they can get those two areas addressed, Nick Chubb is a stud. You've got so many pieces on all three levels of the defense to, you know, potentially be a dominant group on that side of the ball.
I agree with you. And I'm not going to say, well, I told you so. But the minute they made the trade for Odell, I was excited because we've had so few superstars in the history of Cleveland sports since I've been alive. I mean, you're talking about LeBron.
Mark Price.
Really good player, not a superstar. I mean,
does Doherty make the list?
He does not make the list. But I mean, the Indians have had some good players. Like a Francisco Lindor is very close to superstar status in this sport. But there haven't been a lot.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason. I think it really doesn't. The city doesn't lend itself to superstar status. We're just kind of the city that. We always have a chip on our shoulder. We feel like people are talking bad about us.
Yeah, one team has Michael Jordan. You have Craig Elo.
Right,
you
know. Exactly. He's still trying. Stop laughing at him, guys. I was at that game.
Were you really?
I was at the Come shot on. By Michael Jordan.
Come on.
Section 131, row T, seat 16.
How old were you?
I was a senior in high school. Wait, 80. Yeah, I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
So that was the same day I got my first speeding ticket. I was going to
That's a bad day for
I
you,
was
buddy.
Going to pick up my girlfriend at the time, by the way, not worth speeding for. And we ended up going to the game, and I kid you not, at the end here.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry, and I was just kind of like numb. And afterward, I run out into the concourse, and I started leading a chant. I was like, here we go, Brownies, here we go. Because we bypassed Indians season at that time.
Yeah.
That stuff didn't matter because they were so bad.
That is a great story, Roger.
I was also at the drive.
Were you
by John Elway?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, section 37.
That's a lot of pain in your history. Here.
Yes, section 37, row 2, seat 1, and that one. That was one time where I actually, after Brian Brennan caught the touchdown to put the Browns up 20 to 13 with, you know, whatever 5:48 to go. I remember saying in my head, I was like, oh my God, we're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Like you allowed yourself to go there.
I did. Yeah. I was like, we are going to the Super Bowl, and then of course, you know,
he was pretty good.
Yeah, I asked him years later, John Elway, when he came on Best Damn, I said, I'm a Browns fan. Is there anything you'd like to say? We want to apologize? He's like, not really. I was like, yeah, sounds about right.
That was it.
Sounds perfect. Thanks, John.
We've had a great day here meeting with a bunch of different people in this sport, and I'm learning a lot about how you're building teams, constructing organizations, which the difference, the main difference with NFL and MLB in terms of the personnel side, it's really an organization when you think about all the different levels
right.
that you have to get up and having that same message kind of permeate throughout the entire organization. That's a challenge these guys have in building that entire operation.
Right. Well, I mean, when you look at it, when we cover the NFL draft,
yeah.
we as fans as well, we sit there and we say, boy, how can that guy help us next year? Yeah. You know, where we ended up winning 7 games, but maybe that guy pushes us to a level where we're at 8 or 9. And, you know, you can't think that way in baseball.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. There aren't guys who you draft. Now, we do tend to see what we've seen over the last 5 years is guys make such a rapid move to the major league level. You're yeah. seeing guys that are 20 and 21
yeah.
not only contribute, but be stars at this level.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's becoming a little bit more like the NFL draft in from that standpoint. Like, if we draft a college pitcher, can he have 1 year of seasoning and he can help us the year after he gets drafted?
Well, they don't want to give away the innings. I mean, if you only got so many innings in you, you might as well make them count.
Totally, yeah. totally. So that's why we've kind of seen the pendulum swing a little bit more toward college pitchers being drafted very high.
One of the executives we talked to today said Kyler Murray would have been a great baseball player. He was in on him. He was, you know, a lot of time during that time period, I remember a bunch of people saying, maybe the A's had reached for him as right. a baseball player, more of a project than anything else. I don't remember who it was. He was adamant about the fact he would have been a great player. What was the consensus, if we go back in time, during that decision for Kyler Murray?
Well, I talked to two different personnel people in the baseball world when we were trying to wrap our hands around the Murray decision, you know, what was it, 11 months ago or so. And they both said not only did the A's not make a mistake, but he could have gone number one in that draft.
Wow.
That's how good he was. You know, that they felt like, you know, he had a great swing, mm-hmm. that he was going to be a super plus defender
yeah.
in the outfield. He was going to chase everything down in a pretty spacious outfield and obviously had an amazing arm.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the rest of the stuff would...
We could teach you the rest.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fascinating to
yep.
me. The difference, I'll leave you with this one because I'm just curious, spending so much time in both worlds, is there something that a successful manager has in baseball that you see as a successful head coach in football? Because it's such a different job.
Totally different.
But is there one thing that carries over to both?
I don't know if it, you know...
Communication is one of the things that is a bunch
about. That's the big thing that yeah. you're talking about. I mean, you're dealing with grown men, and in the baseball world has changed significantly in the last 5 years with the way analytics are applied. And yeah. a lot of that, for better or worse, means that more and more players are becoming, I'm not going to say bit players, but at least platoon guys
mm-hmm.
when they're not raised to be that way. And so they don't understand, why is it beneficial that I'm not playing here?
Yeah.
And so it's really the manager's job to take that information. And I imagine that when it comes to the NFL as well, there's a lot of that mm-hmm. that has to cross over. I mean, I think I find it fascinating as we learn more and more about what's going on in the NFL analytically, and particularly when we listen to the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh in his press conference,
all in,
where they've got the 25-year-old kid from Yale
yeah.
who's, you know, helping them with probabilities. And that's a huge thing, right? Like, why we're sitting here going, wait, you're going for it on 4th and 1 at your own 44 with 4.5 minutes to go? That's insane yeah. at a tie game. Why would you do that? Well, because the analytics say that we have a better shot of winning the game here by going for it than if we punt.
The other thing that the analytics tell me is you've got Marshall Yanda at right guard. You've got Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram. The chances are pretty good. I didn't need to consult a math book or a right. calculator to figure that one out. I think those odds are in your favor.
I'm with you on that, but 5 years ago, if you make that play,
oh, you're an idiot.
People yeah. are kicking and screaming. At least now there's a thought process behind.
I think the 25-year-old kid from Yale is the fall guy in case this ever goes wrong.
That's what he is.
It's like John Harbaugh is a Josh Harbaugh. That's the 25-year-old kid from Yale. That's not Harbaugh's call.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's a fall guy.
It is. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's always important to make the Ivy Leaguers the fall guys.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we talked Browns. So last thing before we wrap up here from the baseball.
Padres?
We're going Padres because
nice.
I'm selfish.
Yes.
Do we have potentially, maybe not yet, but potentially the best player in baseball? Potentially.
Yeah, I'm such a huge fan of his. If I'm buying stock in a single baseball player, it's Fernando Tatis
yes.
Jr. Now.
You hear that back there, guys? You hear that?
Yep. Does the injury, like the back, bother me at age 20 when he's yeah. hurting already? Yes, particularly at that position, because that is the most demanding position.
Ooh, the way he plays, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's just phenomenal. I had never seen somebody tag up from the infield before. Ever.
He did it twice.
And he did it twice. Huh. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. So he's awesome.
You having fun this week here?
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's a different world, isn't it?
It is. But we've learned, you know, some of the things when you, when you're talking to people in personnel, it doesn't matter the sport, and you start talking about kind of the scouting aspect of it, they light up like a Christmas tree, because we've all stayed in crappy hotels.
Right.
We've all found a player we love. We've all been right. We've all been wrong. And there's like a connection that's kind of cool.
Right.
That you end up having with these guys, even though we don't know each other, different sports, but there's still something there. It's been fun.
Did D-Row ask you about his Cowboys?
The first question I asked him was, why are you a Cowboy fan?
Oh, yeah. Well,
you don't hear many people with that accent that root for the Cowboys.
No, he's like, well, you know, the household, all Giants fans, and I had to go opposite of my brother, and so now I'm a huge, God, they're so disappointing.
10 years. We've had Jason Garrett. It's not happening.
Gosh, you got to get him out.
That's great. That is fantastic. Yeah. How about, last thing, I'll let you go. Give me your Bruce Bochy. Bruce Bochy on his decision to walk away from baseball. Go.
Well, for 25 years I was in the dugout, and I was the luckiest guy. I had a phenomenal time in San Diego and then San Francisco, where I coached Buster and Mad Bum and Pablo and, you know, I got the largest head of anybody you've ever seen, except for the floats in the Macy's Thanksgiving parade. But yeah, it was special, DJ. It was special.
That's it.
There you go.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Buck, his Bruce Bochy impression, I think it might be the best impression I've ever heard. I don't know how much you've heard Bruce Bochy talk, but that is exactly what it sounds like.
Look, man, Roser is a very, very talented broadcaster. That impression was outstanding. I think the big thing, like, whenever we talk to Rose, is just the ups and downs of the Cleveland Browns and being a Browns fan. My heart goes out to him. The roller coaster ride that he's been on since his childhood, because I know this was the year that everyone thought the Cleveland Browns were going to make some noise, so it has to be disappointing for him.
Yeah, no doubt. But he's still got a smile on his face, because that's our Chris Rose. We love him to death. It's always fun to have him on the show. All right, Buck, we're wrapping this thing up. Anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, that was great, man. I'm looking forward to these games, man. This is the type of podcast that I love, man. Like, now that we're getting into the wheelhouse, beginning to talk about these guys in the 2020 draft, I'm really excited to kind of talk about them even more.
Now we'll get a chance to catch up next week. Looking forward to that. We're going to have our episode next week, which is the best of our coaching conversations about building culture. We're going to roll that out next week. I hope you guys will be on the lookout for that. It's going to be one of our best podcasts we've ever done. All right, thank you guys so much for checking us out. Thanks to Nabil for producing this bad boy. That is going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to Move the Sticks, presented by AARP.